Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the first regular full-length episode of Sarah's Bookshelves Live for 2020. And I say regular because my first full-length episode of the year was the Winter 2020 book preview with Catherine from Gilmore Guide to Books. And those are always really popular episodes. So if you missed that one, go check it out. And I also want to apologize up front. I'm on the tail end of a cold right now, so my voice sounds a little bit scratchy. So I'm sorry about that, but we will make it through. So for those of you that have Bookstagram goals for 2020, and I'm sure that's a lot of you, this episode is for you. Today's guest is Jordan Moblow, otherwise known as @jordies.book.club on Instagram. Jordan started his Bookstagram account in July of 2018, so only about a year and a half ago, and he grew it to over 30,000 followers in that short amount of time. So today, we're going to talk about how he did it. Welcome, Jordan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here on a weekend, y'all. So this is a Saturday recording. Jordan is all the way out west, and I'm on the East Coast, and he works full time, so we had to make it work on a weekend. Tell me, why did you decide to start a Bookstagram account?
I didn't decide to start one. I think that I was just looking for a place to keep track of everything I was reading. And when I was taking pictures of books and looking through Instagram randomly, I think I just stumbled into this rabbit hole that is this community of book lovers. And when I was looking at all the beautiful pictures and amazing reviews, it became this thing that I thought was really exciting and interesting that I wanted to be a part of. And so while I would like to think I had altruistic intentions at the beginning and just wanted to be able to share my reviews with the people in my life, it became, you know, a jumping off point into being part of this community.
And it is a rabbit hole, and it is a wonderful community.
Yes.
I mean, that's why I do it too. I can't say I'm doing this altruistically. I mean, I love being a part of it. I heard you mention on Instagram that your husband was super apprehensive of you starting this. Is that true? And if so, why?
I don't think he was apprehensive of me starting it. I think that he didn't really know what it was. And if I'm being honest, I didn't even tell him that I was doing it for the first few weeks I started because it was so weird watching me walk around taking pictures of books. It just isn't normal now that I've been doing it for a year and a half. I take book pictures in the middle of public, don't care who's looking at me. But when I first started, it was kind of weird. And I was also buying a lot of books because obviously you need content to be able to take pictures of books. And I didn't have a big library. So I think that he was apprehensive and he's like, you're buying a lot of books. And I was like, no, just for now, hopefully as I start to build an account, it will become something and then I can start to receive books. I have library books, this will be something someday. So I think he started off apprehensive, but then I think as he's seen how creatively fulfilling it's been for me, how much I've enjoyed it and just what I've been able to do with it in the past year, I think that he's actually much more proud of it now than, when I first started this thing. You knew that he was officially on board the day that I was trying to take a picture and I couldn't get it. And it had been an hour and he went downstairs and got the ladder out and brought it back upstairs. And he was like, let's do it with the ladder. And he held the ladder while we did book pictures. So I think he is fully on board, if not a junior editor on the site now.
That is a good Bookstagram husband.
That's true love.
That is true love. My husband's supportive, but he knows nothing about taking pictures or anything. And it wouldn't occur to him what I needed to help me. So
yes.
You started your account in 2018. And for y'all that aren't aware of this, that was 2 years after Instagram changed from a chronological feed to an algorithm-based feed, which made it very, very hard to organically gain followers. But you managed to get around 30,000 followers in a year and a half, which that is a lot for the book world. How did you do that in such a short amount of time with the algorithm-based feed making it really difficult for you? What do you think makes you able to connect with everyone to such a degree that you were able to build that following so quickly?
I mean, I think it's a few things. I mean, first of all, I'm really thankful and grateful to the community and for everyone who does follow me. I always laugh. I'm like, it blows my mind that people are interested in pictures of books that I just put on my coffee table. But, you know, it's been a really rewarding and creatively fulfilling experience. And I think that I've managed to build a following based on a few things. First of all, I think that Bookstagram is predominantly female driven. So being a man in the Bookstagram community, I think kind of sets me apart from everyone else. I just, that in that sense, I think that that helps me.
How do you feel being a man in this predominantly female community? Because I think you're right. It really is mostly women.
I love it. I think it's hilarious that I'm one of the few men in the world. But look, I grew up with my mom and my sister. We've always been huge readers. I wasn't allowed to watch TV growing up. So my mom took my sister and I to the library every week. And we still share books and book recommendations. And so I think that Bookstagram is kind of almost an extension of my immediate family, and that the things that I like are very similar to what the people on Bookstagram are liking, and especially the people that I communicate and talk to on a daily basis. So that's been really refreshing.
And so tell us the other two things you were going to say about why you think you've been able to connect with everybody.
I spend a lot of time on my photography. When I first started, I had no idea what I was doing. And it's funny to go back and look at my pictures from when I first started. It like makes me cringe a little bit that I think I would never post those pictures today. But I think that I take a lot of time in how I set up my pictures. I think a lot about my layout. So I think that that has helped as well. And I think I'm authentic. I have a unique point of view. I'm honest without being mean most of the time. I have a sense of humor. I try and be friendly and original and authentic and have a point of view. And I think that that goes a long way when you're trying to cut through the clutter that is the thousands and thousands of people who are doing something very similar.
Totally. And there are so many people.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many great accounts too. It's like, it's crazy to me that I've managed to cut through the clutter in some way, but you know, I'm very appreciative of it.
Did you have those ideas in your head right when you started as like a set strategy, or did you sort of trial and error your way towards this?
No. Like I said, I started just as a place to kind of keep track of what I was reading. And I had a very specific aesthetic when I started, which was pretty much just the book laying flat on a table somewhere or with an interesting background. And then as I started to get inspiration from other accounts, as I started talking to people and started to see like, look, you can get advanced copies of books that haven't come out yet, and you can win free books, and you can do all these different things. And as I started to see what the world was and learn more about publishing, Bookstagram, and books in general, I think my idea of what I was doing when I started has grown throughout the past year and a half as I've been doing it. I think it's also important to note that not any one person is doing the same thing with Bookstagram. I think it's important that if you're just starting out, or if you're, you know, frustrated by it, that you do what makes you happy. So like for me, the photography really makes me happy. I love reading books. I love talking to people about books. So I've really like leaned into those kind of things, and I've leaned away from the things that I don't love. And I think that that's really important to note too.
What do you not love about it?
You know what? I was having a lot of trouble with my review posts. They weren't doing well. They're really difficult for me to do. I'm not a writer. I'm not writing day in, day out. So it takes me a long time to write a review. And I don't really love being negative in my review. So I think that I felt like I was beholden to a certain aesthetic and structure in my posts. And one day I was like, I don't like doing these review posts the way I'm doing them, and I'm going to switch it up. And when I did that and started taking different pictures and started posting in different ways and doing shorter reviews and doing reviews and stories, it like kind of freed me up a lot. And so I think like that's the most recent example of me leaning away from something I didn't love and trying to figure out a new way to refresh my account.
And I think that's so key to having longevity in the Bookstagram world, because I think it's very easy to burn out if you feel like it's just weighing down on you.
I didn't think about the burnout of it until I went back and looked at some of my posts from last year in anticipation of this interview. And it was so interesting how many people I talked to when I first started that are no longer on Book Instagram. Like the burnout rate is very high.
Very high. Yeah, it's crazy.
I think that if you want to be successful at it, and I think, look, I like to say I'm not in it for the followers, but it is nice to have a following. As you have more followers, you get more opportunities, you're offered more books. Those are all things that I think people ultimately like, whether they say it or not. And I think that it's easy to get in the headspace of the rat race of how do I get followers quickly? And if that doesn't happen, then I think people get tired. And I think if you don't post regularly, if you don't love taking pictures, then I think that it's easy just to fall out of it. And I think that's okay also.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is, I know that people within the Bookstagram community understand this, but I'm not sure if regular readers that follow the Bookstagram community but don't really put a lot of effort into their own or just aren't focused on their own Bookstagram accounts for whatever reason. I don't know if people quite get that, like, no one does this as a job. This is right. Everyone's, like, side hobby. And it does take a fair amount of time.
Yeah. I get up every morning at 6 a.m. or I try to. My husband's probably laughing right now. And I try to read for an hour and a half. I try to go to the gym. And then I have an hour in the morning to like pictures, look at content, take my own pictures, post, and then respond to people on my post. So, like, I get a lot of people who respond, like, you never responded to my message or you didn't like my comment. And you're like, I'm really sorry. This is not my full-time job. I have a full-time job. This is just my, like, hobby that I really love. There's only so much time in the day.
Right. And it sounds like you have a very full day before you even set foot into your office, your real office.
Yes. Priorities.
Priorities. So you mentioned a while back your aesthetic, and I want to talk a little bit about that because that's one of the things that when I first started following you, that's what really drew me to your account. For me, you have very clean, crisp lines, which I love, and that's sort of my aesthetic in, like, home decor, if you will. And I see that in your pictures. And you also have the white coffee mug. I went way deep in your Instagram account, way back to the beginning. The white coffee mug has been there from the beginning.
The white coffee mug is my OG coffee mug.
It's your calling card.
Exactly. When I started it, it was like every picture I was posting was like my morning routine. If you go way back when I first started it. So it was like, this is my morning routine. This is what I'm doing every morning. And it was always the coffee mug. And I'm not very good with props. It's funny. People take pictures with props and they make it look so easy. But taking pictures with props is really difficult because you either come off really cheesy or it looks like you just kind of threw these things on a table. And it is the thing that drives me nuts because I have OCD tendencies where I am never happy with how a prop looks in a picture. So I have to give credit to the people who are able to execute the pictures so well, but I can only do a coffee mug. Like, that's the one prop I can do. And other than that, I'm kind of a loser.
Well, I think also if you'd use too many props, they can look really cluttered.
Yeah.
And your pictures never, ever look cluttered, which I totally appreciate. Like, I'm a minimalist. Big time.
Same. And I think for me, we have this giant gray dining room table that I'm obsessed with. And I have a marble one also. And they're just really great at allowing the pictures of the books to really pop and for the books to be front and center rather than like a prop or a succulent or a drink and a dessert or something. It just, you know, that's my aesthetic. If I can make pies like the Pie Lady reads, I would be making pies every day. I try to do that. I can't do that. She is incredible and she should be featured in Oprah's magazine. I can do coffee mugs and books.
It's just at Pie Lady Books, right?
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't follow that Instagram account and you like books and you like kind of beautiful food, she makes these themed pies around the books she's talking about that are amazing. So go follow her. I do want to talk a little bit about your photography because I think it is one of your strong points. Do you have a background in photography? It seems like you do.
No, I have no background in photography. Nothing.
All right. So how did you learn to make your pictures look the way you do? And specifically to make the book stand out? And a little side note, y'all, I'll link to Jordan's specific post from Instagram where he does this, but he gives a very detailed tutorial of how to make the book pop in a photo via different editing tools. And it's too much to talk through on the podcast, but I will link to that post in my show notes for you all, because if you're looking for help in that area, this is where you need to go.
There's no one right way to take a picture, but I get a lot of people asking me, like, how did you do this? Or how long does it take you to do these things? And I don't have a background in photography. It's funny. My husband is the one that is the photographer of the family. I actually got him a nice camera because I hate taking pictures. But something about taking book pictures, like, is really relaxing and fulfilling for me. And I think there are a few things that I do. I use grid lines on the camera. The grid lines are like the number one piece of advice I can give when you're taking pics of books.
While you're actually taking the picture, not later in the editing process.
Correct. Like, I actually line up the books. You can turn it on in your settings, and it's in one of my posts. You can turn it on in your settings where you actually put the grid lines on so you can line up the corners of the book and get a nice, perfect square on picture. So that's my number one piece of advice. The other thing is you have to remember that if you're taking pictures on the iPhone, I take all of my pictures on an iPhone. that the camera lens is not centered on the back of your camera, but it's at the top right. So you have to be cognizant of where the lens is actually centered above your book pictures, or else you can get that fishbowl kind of look that kind of distorts everything. So you have to be very careful about that. And then with regards to the photos actually popping, I use photo editing software. I think that if you want really beautiful, crisp book photos, a photo editing app is pretty much mandatory. I know there are a lot out there. I have a bunch of them, and I suggest you test a bunch of them and see which one you like the best. Me, I've always liked Facetune, even though it's more for people's faces and their pictures, but it actually has been really useful for me for my book photos, and I just love it. And it's easy to use.
So y'all, I'll link to that in the show notes as well. So do you ever use just the editing features that are built into your iPhone, or do you think these apps are just worlds better?
I think that the apps are worlds better for brightening pictures, for you can use different tools to focus on the book and blur the background. So I think in that sense, they're super effective. I think that the iPhone editing tools on the iPhone as is are good for, I use them for cropping and rotation. So I definitely use it for that.
I only edit on my iPhone, and I'm like sitting here like, oh my Lord, I am behind the times.
Look, I think that the iPhone has come so far since I started Instagramming, but I am so a creature of habit, and my app is the one that I'm used to using. And I've tried to go to the other ones and the ones that people use and recommend, and I just have never liked them as much as the one I use. That's the one I like. But I will say I do use the Instagram app. So once I'm done editing, I'll go into the Instagram app, and I use if you don't take a perfectly square picture of your books, I always use Instagram because you can fix it in there. You can use the tool on there, the adjust.
Yep.
I use the adjust tool, and I use that to move the picture around to get a perfectly square shot.
And also, one thing I do, this is probably the only tip I have for anybody on Instagram pictures, but if I'm in the middle of taking a bunch of pictures of like one setup, I will go actually put my picture in the Instagram app and see how it looks in Instagram before I decide, did I get the shot?
Oh, that's so smart.
Because like you look at the whole picture on your regular album, photo album, and it looks really different when it's just the square crop within Instagram.
It's super smart. And I have an app called Preview. And it actually puts your Instagram grid on there, so you can put the picture into your grid and see what it will look like along with all the rest of your pictures on your feed. Here's a really good tip. If you use Preview, it allows you to put your caption in, and it will do all the spacing for you. So when you copy and paste it into the Instagram app, it'll keep all of your spacing perfect as is.
Ooh.
Because I know there's nothing more frustrating than when you do all your spacing and then Instagram screws it up.
Yep, totally. That's a great tip. And I use the Later app for the captioning, and that kind of does similar with the spacing. But that's a big problem I know lots of people complain about.
It's the worst.
But y'all, I think the point here is that you can do this. Like, you don't have to be an expert photographer. You don't have to have an expensive camera. There are some easy tips to help really elevate your photos.
For me, look, I have no experience. I have an iPhone, and it's just practice. It's just been 2 years of me practicing. And look, every time I take a setup, I take 20 to 30 pictures, and I sit there and I edit each one of them to see which ones I like. So it's just been me doing it over and over again for, 600 plus posts.
And you can come a long way with trial and error.
Yeah. I look at everyone's accounts. I get a lot of inspiration from other people's accounts, and I try out different things. And, I think it's just a matter of what's important to you. Some people, the pictures aren't as important, and it's the review and the text. So I think it's a matter of, what do you really care about?
And also kind of figuring out, what do people look to you for? So has your reading life changed dramatically since you started Bookstagram, and how has it changed?
It has changed. I mean, obviously it's changed in the sense that I read a lot more than I did when I first started. When I first started, I was probably reading 10 to 15 books a year, and I work in entertainment, so I was reading a lot of other things like magazines and scripts and things like that. But I think once I've started my account, I probably going to read 200 plus books this year.
You went from 15 books to 200? That's amazing.
Yeah, I did 15 probably in 2017. I did 115 last year, and I'll probably do 225, I think, this year.
So what routines have you put in place that enable you to make a jump like that?
I mean, I wake up early to read. I think that's the most important thing that I've started doing.
Yep.
And we used to watch a lot of TV at night, and I think that that's cut down a lot. I do a lot of reading at night as well.
But other than that, it hasn't changed that much. You just have to fit it in where you can. I listen to audiobooks when I go to work now, which I didn't do before, really.
And I'm sure you sit in a lot of traffic, huh?
Yeah, welcome to Los Angeles.
I know, right? One last thing before we get to your book recommendations. This was a listener question, and I thought we could both talk about it because we're both in the same boat here. You were a Book of the Month judge in November, and a listener wanted to know what that was like.
A dream come true. Amazing. I've been a fan of the Book of the Month since I joined a couple of years ago. And I just think they have such great recommendations. And I normally can find something that I'm going to love. And the ones that I normally skip, I always end up going back and getting one of those books anyway, because they're still great. And as a fan, it was great to be approached by their team. And they asked, you know, if I would be interested in reviewing a book. And luckily for me, it was a book that I was really excited about. It was a Lisa Jewell book called The Family Upstairs. And I'm a huge fan of the author. I was terrified because, you know, I've never written a review that's going to be seen by, I think they said, like 100,000 plus people. So that was kind of terrifying. But they were super nice. And the whole process was really fun.
Did you have like a connection to somebody at Book of the Month when they asked you? Or did they just reach out to you randomly?
You know what? I had been messaging with them a little bit. You know, I've asked them before if certain books are going to be part of it. And I've always said, like, I'd love to be involved in some way. And they reached out and they're like, we have this one. Would you be interested in it? So I think that was how that relationship came about.
So I was a Book of the Month judge in October. I think most of y'all know that. 1 month before Jordan. And I had had Siobhan Jones on the podcast this summer. So that's how I got in there. I'm sure that I never would have been asked had Siobhan not come on the podcast, and we sort of developed that relationship from there. But she was wonderful, and it's still my listeners' favorite episode. Y'all, it's episode 25 if you missed it. Siobhan goes all kinds of detail about the behind the scenes of Book of the Month, how they choose the books, why they choose certain things, their strategy. I feel like I learned a lot from it.
It's a good episode, and you had one of my favorite books of the year too.
This is how it happened with me. Siobhan emailed me and she said, we have openings for two books, and Nothing to See Here was one of them. And the other one was, I think it was The Fountains of Silence. Is that right?
Yeah.
But it was I think a YA historical fiction. And so I already had a galley of Nothing to See Here. So I quickly read the first chapter because I did not want to have to go back to them and be like, I'm sorry, I actually didn't like this book. You know what I mean? That was my greatest fear with being a judge for Book of the Month. Because Siobhan and I talked about that on the episode. Like, what happens? Do you ever have a judge come back and say, oh, I didn't really like this, I can't review it for you? And she said, yes, that does happen. And she does not mind when it happens. She doesn't want someone reviewing a book they didn't like, but she gets frustrated when it happens like the day before the deadline. Fair enough, right?
Right.
So I was like, I'm never going to get this opportunity again. What if I don't like the book?
Lucky for you.
Lucky for me, we were down at the Chesapeake Bay, and I quickly took my Kindle down to the beach with a glass of wine, and I sat there and I read the first chapter, and I was like, okay, I can do this. And it was awesome.
Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson, if you haven't read it yet, people.
Yes, and y'all, Bird Level and I talked about it at length on episode 40 of the podcast, too. All right, let's get into your book recommendations. So as usual, Jordan is going to share two old books he loves, two new books he loves, one book he does not love, and one upcoming release that he's excited about. And I'm sure many, many people are excited about this upcoming release as well. Jordan, tell me about the first old book you love.
The first old book I love is this book called Fantastic Land by the author Mike Bachoven. And it's this amazing, I almost call it horror/dystopic. It's like Lord of the Flies, but set in an amusement park where a hurricane is coming towards an amusement park in Florida, and all of the teenage employees there are forced to hunker down and stay within the amusement park because it's the safest place to be. And once the hurricane is over, the government believes, because the whole amusement park is stocked with supplies, that they don't have to rescue these kids first. And what happens is the kids kind of like form their own tribes in the amusement park. They have the park to themselves. And what happens when kids who are cut off from the outside world are left to their own devices?
Lord of the Flies happens.
Lord of the Flies. And it's pretty dark and funny and really interesting. And it's told in like an interview format where the kids are being interviewed by the police in the aftermath. And it's just a really fun, fun book. And I loved it.
I read a little bit about this book. I have not actually read the book, but it sounded to me like the structure was a little bit like podcast in book form. Would you say that, or is that not really accurate?
Yes. I mean, I guess it would actually make a really good podcast, like a dramatic one, but it's told like each chapter is an interview with someone else who is in the park and their experience. And it's this whole narrative of what happened from the start when the hurricane hits to the end, when the government finally comes in to rescue them and what mayhem has occurred.
So I do not normally read horror. I like Stephen King's books, but not his horror ones. But this one sounds really interesting to me. I like the whole structure concept.
It's definitely, there's some scary parts to it, but I don't think it's like horror in the sense that like you'll be terrified and can't read it at night. I think it's just much more, it's a really fun book and I recommend it to anyone, even if you're not a big fan of horror. I'll just say I haven't met any person I've recommended it to who hasn't liked
it. It sounds super fascinating. And I love books that are flash transitions almost between different people's perspective of the same event. Like Daisy Jones was a little bit like that for me.
Yeah, this is very similar narrative structured as well. So I think that that's a good comparison.
Yeah, I loved the structure of that one. And not, and the topic obviously sounds very different, but.
Yeah, a little different. Still good, though. Both just as good.
All right. So that was Fantastic Land by Mike Bakoven. And that came out in October of 2016. All right. Tell me about the second new book you loved.
So the second book I picked was The Blinds by Adam Sternberg, which is, I would guess I would call it grounded genre. And it was also a book of the month pick when it came out, I think a couple years ago.
Yes, it was.
So the idea is that scientists have created a technology where they can remove certain memories from someone's brain. And they decide to test the technology on a group of people. And the group of people they picked is prisoners or convicted felons and people who are in witness protection. And what they've done is they've removed the memories of these felons' crimes and the crimes that the witnesses saw. And they've put them all into this town in the middle of Texas and given them a new chance at life. So none of these criminals, none of these witnesses remember any piece of their criminal history. They get a second chance at life. And what happens is there is a murder in the town and the police sheriff is forced to investigate and figure out which of these criminals and witnesses who don't have any memories of being criminals is committing murder.
I remember that when this was a book of the month pick, and I remember it was described as speculative Western thriller in my little blurb that I wrote about it. I was like, what does that mean?
It's actually really smart. It actually is a perfect way of describing it.
Okay, cool. And I've also heard it compared to Cormac McCarthy and Shirley Jackson. Do you think that's accurate?
I think the Cormac McCarthy comparison is because it takes place in a dusty town in the middle of Texas. And it's a bunch of like these really interesting characters interacting with each other. But I think it's really interesting because the author does a good job of setting up a lot of really cool twists and mysteries. You don't know who's a criminal, who's a witness, what these people did in their past lives. There's some talk about the technology. It's sci-fi, speculative fiction, but it's not hammering you over the head with it. So I think those people who are like, ooh, sci-fi, could actually really enjoy this because I think it's a character piece first and foremost.
Gotcha. So good for crossover appeal.
Yeah. I think in the last year, a lot of people really enjoyed Blake Crouch's Recursion, and a lot of people really enjoyed our Mystery Book Club pick last month that was Anyone by Charles Sewell. And I think anyone who enjoys a little bit of a mix of this sci-fi with really well-written character stories will enjoy this book.
Awesome. So that was The Blinds by Adam Sternberg, and that came out in August 2017.
Yeah, and I think you can still add it on for Book of the Month, so I think that it's still available.
Yeah, I was going to say, possibly you might be able to. I couldn't remember off the top of my head whether it was still there or not, but.
Yeah, if it is, you should add it on.
All right, tell me about the first new book you love.
So the first new book I love is the new one from Ger Hendrix and Sarah Pekkanen called You Are Not Alone, which comes out in March. And if you're not aware of who Sarah and Greer are, they are the authors behind last year's An Anonymous Girl and also The Wife Between Us, which came out a couple years ago, which is one of my favorite thrillers of recent. And their new one is probably up there as one of my favorites as well. It's this story about kind of an introverted woman who doesn't have any friends, who she witnesses a woman commit suicide and somehow manages to fall into this woman's group of friends and finally has a group of women that she can relate to. And you find out that this group may not be who they first appear to be.
Did you notice in the synopsis that the publisher has put out for this book that there's very little revealed?
Very little. It's like 10 baby sentences that make no sense and you have no idea what you're talking about.
You know what, though? I appreciate that, especially with a thriller, because I feel like oftentimes publishers go way overboard on giving away too much of what goes on in the book. And I, for a thriller especially, I'd like to go in kind of blind. So I appreciate that they do that, but it totally piques my interest.
I think that it is understated how difficult it is to write a successful thriller in this day and age post Gone Girl. I think that so many people try to master and put out a great thriller and so many people fail at it. It is a very difficult thing to do. So I'm appreciative if you don't have a lot in your synopsis for your book. It makes it easier for me to jump into something knowing nothing rather than giving way too much information. And, you know, I think everyone wants to be the person who figured it out on page one and be that smart person. And I prefer to be the person who is totally blindsided. So I don't want to be the one that knows what's happening.
I like to be surprised, but I also, for me, it has to make sense looking back on it. If I'm blindsided and it's like outlandish, I don't like that.
No, I think that you have to have the breadcrumbs have to be existing from the beginning. You have to have those breadcrumbs.
And once you can see them through a different lens, it still totally makes sense. You just weren't looking at it with the right lens along the way.
Yes. I read a couple thrillers last year where the twist at the end was so bonkers that I actually had to go back and read like the last quarter of the book again because it didn't make sense to me because there were not enough breadcrumbs. And I think that Greer and Sarah do a really good job, especially with like a book like The Wife Between Us, where I was like, I figured it out very quickly. I know what the twist is. And they're like, yeah, you know the twist, but we're going to make it even crazier and you're definitely not going to understand it. And that kind of boggled my mind that they were able to do it a couple times where I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah, I've not read that one. I have read Anonymous Girl and I did really like it. And thrillers are tough for me. I'm very picky with my thrillers. And so the fact that I liked an Anonymous Girl is that's a big deal for me.
I think Greer and Sarah do a really good job of writing female characters that have their own agency and are making their own decisions, not based on those of a man. They're not reacting to a man. They're reacting to themselves or other women, which I think is really refreshing.
Yes, I totally agree. And I also like that, at least with An Anonymous Girl, I liked that it got deep into the psychology.
Yeah.
I guess the psychological half of psychological thriller rather than the thriller half. And that's, I have noticed that the thrillers I do like are heavy on the psychology, lighter on the thriller.
I think that that's smart. And I think also it's characters. If you don't have characters that you can relate to or you understand where they're coming from, then you're never going to relate or understand their decision-making later on when you actually want to appreciate the twists and turns that happen.
Absolutely. I'm going to make you a bet too.
Okay.
You're going to want to take my side of the bet though. I bet you $100 that this book is going to be a February Book of the Month pick.
Oh, I will 100% take that bet.
The reason I think that is, I know that they really like to do repeat authors if the book does well for them. And so The Wife Between Us has been a Book of the Month pick. So is An Anonymous Girl. So this would be a 3-time pick. And I think the only other author that has been a 3-time pick was Riley Sager.
Oh, wow.
I could be wrong about that now that some time has passed. But at the time when I recorded with Siobhan, that was the case. Also, they have to have a thriller every month. Otherwise, their members will go absolutely ballistic.
Is that true?
Yes. Huh. Did you see what went on Facebook? I think it was October. They didn't pick a thriller and people went crazy.
Well, if this one is one of them, it's a very good choice to go with. It was probably one of my favorite ones I read in December.
Awesome. I have not gotten to it yet. I just downloaded it. All right. So that was You Are Not Alone by Greer Hendricks and Sarah Pekkanen. Again, it's not out yet. It's out March 3rd of 2020, but this is one that you want to get on your library hold list for immediately because they're going to be a mile long. Okay, tell me about your second new book you love.
So my second new book is a book that came out last month called Anyone by Charles Sewell, which is also, this one is pretty hardcore sci-fi, but I think if you like Blake Crouch books like Dark Matter or Recursion, then this is one you are definitely going to want to add to your list. It's probably up there as one of my favorites last year. And this one is about a woman who creates technology. I feel like I'm recommending a lot of books where people are creating technology. This one is about a woman who creates a technology where you can transfer your consciousness into the body of someone else and what that looks like when that technology becomes a worldwide thing.
Isn't this author a comic book writer as well?
Yeah, Charles Sewell is a comic book writer. And then he's written two novels. One of them was called The Oracle Year, which came out a couple of years ago, which is about a man who wakes up one day and he has like 100+ premonitions of the future that start coming true and what happens when those go out into the world. And this is his follow-up to that one. And it came out in December and we used it. It was our first pick for our mystery book club that we do on Instagram. And it was a huge, huge hit for us.
Yes, I was going to mention that because I feel like I've been seeing it on Instagram a lot with your hashtag. So can you tell us just a little bit about your mystery book club?
Our mystery book club is not, we get a lot of misconceptions that it's mystery books that we read. And actually it's not. So my friend Carrie, who is at Boston Book Fanatic, and I, we run this club where we, every month, we pick a new book and we work with the publisher to give copies to winners and members of Mystery Book Club. But we don't tell anyone what that book is. They just have to trust that we have good taste and that the book that we are picking and working on is something that people will like.
That's so cool. Okay, I was totally misinformed. I just sort of expected it was like, oh, you pick a mystery you really like every month to read.
You know what? We've gotten to a point now where we want to do something fun that was different from the traditional giveaways and book clubs that everyone had been doing. And we thought, why not put them together and work with publishers to start to build buzz on books and also build our brand in the sense that, you know what? If you trust us enough, you should enter this giveaway. You should enter to be part of this book club. And we are going to pick fantastic, buzzworthy, interesting new releases that you can be a part of. If you win and you're selected, we have these awesome discussion groups that are rolling discussions where we talk about the book and what we like and what we don't like. And the best thing about anyone, which was our first one last month, was we were able to do a great discussion group. And then we had a great Q&A with the author, Charles Sewell, as well. That was really fun and informative and gave a lot of our readers and members a new perspective on the book.
Do members have to sign up anywhere or did they just kind of follow you, get the hashtag, and then enter the giveaways when they see them pop up?
Yeah. So all you have to do is you should follow me, follow Carrie at Boston Book Fanatic. And we're doing one of these a month. And we actually have partnerships with publishers and books for the next 4 months. And I think we're still doing our January one right now. So if you haven't entered yet, you should definitely go check it out. We do a few giveaways for each of our mystery books, depending where we are in the cycle. The January one is really fun. Our February, you know, I think we have a horror one. We have mystery. We have speculative fiction. I think we're going to try and get a romance one for May. We have a really fun thriller for April. So there's lots of really, really interesting, big, buzzworthy picks coming out in the next few months.
And I'll link to that in the show notes, y'all. Okay, let's talk about the book you did not love. I know this is not your favorite topic.
My theory is there are lots of books I don't like. I just don't like bringing attention to them. I would much rather spend my time talking about books I do love. But I will say that I had high hopes for The Great Pretender by Susanna Cahalan, and I just found it to be a lot more clinical than it was entertaining and interesting. She wrote a great book a few years about her own journey with mental illness called Brain on Fire. And her new one was supposed to be a look at, I guess back in the 70s, they had a doctor who did a study where a bunch of people tried to get themselves committed to mental institutions and what that looked like. And I thought that sounded incredibly interesting and perfect for my nonfiction November, which I did a couple months ago. And I just found it to be a little bit more clinical than I was hoping it was going to be. And it wasn't for me.
Fair. And I also had high hopes for this book. I loved Brain on Fire. And I ended up DNFing it around 18% for the exact same reasons you mentioned. It just felt like it was kind of like reading a textbook. The style was not like Brain on Fire at all.
Yeah, I think that if you are really interested in the field of psychology and understanding, you know, the history behind it, I think that you'll really enjoy it. But I think if you're looking for a really entertaining and informative look at mental illness and the mental institutions in our country, I don't think that you're going to find that in this one.
Fair. Well, I'm glad to know that sometimes I armchair quarterback if I DNF a book.
Brain on Fire is amazing. So if you haven't read Brain on Fire yet, I definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, that book is awesome. I absolutely loved that one. So yeah, y'all go read Brain on Fire.
Yeah.
Okay, that was The Great Pretender by Susanna Cahalan. And also that was a November Book of the Month Club pick. All right. Let's talk about the new release you're excited about and that probably most of the world, if they don't know about it yet, they're going to know about it soon and they will also be really excited about it.
I have a lot of galleys for upcoming books, and the one galley I don't have, because obviously It's Under Lock and Key is the prequel to The Hunger Games called The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes by Suzanne Collins. And I, as a huge fan of The Hunger Games when it first came out, I don't know what it was now, maybe 10 years now, I am really, really excited about there being a prequel.
I am too. I loved The Hunger Games. And one of my questions for you was, do you think that there will be a single galley of this book anywhere? And I do not think so.
Nope.
This is going to be like a Harry Potter style release, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So when you look up this book on Goodreads or Amazon or wherever, you will notice there is next to nothing about the book other than its publication date. There's not even a synopsis from the publisher other than it is a prequel and it takes place, I think it's like 65 years before the Hunger Games, yeah. Something like that. That's really all that we know about it. So are you nervous at all?
No, I'm excited. I'm not nervous.
I'm a little nervous. A lot of time has passed.
You are?
I get slightly nervous about sequels. And I know this is a prequel, but, you know, kind of the same thing. Especially if a lot of time has passed between them. And I didn't have a great experience with the Testaments.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm nervous. I'm excited. I mean, I hope it's great. I'm hopeful that it's great.
It sounds like it won't include any of the... I mean, if it's 65 years before the first one, it sounds
really,
like it'll
right?
be all new... Yeah, it won't really be any characters from the original trilogy. And I think that's my problem normally with ongoing series is I always forget what happened in the previous book. And then I have to like spend an entire day reading the old books before I can read the new one. So it's kind of nice that I'm a bit of a distance away from the original trilogy. And this is a prequel not featuring any of the characters. So I can go into it as a whole new experience and hopefully not compare and contrast it too much to the original book, which I am still a huge fan of.
Yeah. And I am super curious about how Panem came to be.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
All right. So that's The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes by Suzanne Collins. May 19th, 2020 is what you want to put on your calendar. And y'all, publications dates can change, especially when we're this far out. So that could move. All right. Are you ready to play Rate It?
Yes, I think so.
I like to end every episode with a lightning round game called Rate It, where I throw out five bookish things. And this could be anything book related. Sometimes I really stretch that definition. And you rate it either 1 or 5 stars, just like how you'd rate a book, except for you cannot use 2, 3, or 4 stars. So this is a love-hate thing. All right, number one, book review posts on Instagram.
1.
We've already talked about this a little bit. They don't do well and or you don't like doing them.
They're the most difficult post for me to put together. That being said, I love reading other people's reviews. So it's a 5 when it comes to other people's. It's a 1 when it comes to me doing it myself.
Fair enough. All right. Number 2, posting on Instagram every single day.
5.
And do you think this is key to success for being a good bookstagrammer?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's important to post every day. Look, are there days where it's like, ugh, I have to post? Sure. But for the most part, I have content worked out for the week or I do something really simple. But for me, it's taking pictures and posting is relaxing and creatively fulfilling, which is why I still really enjoy Bookstagram. I like the actual process of doing it. I will say it took me like 2 hours this morning to make a post, though, because I just could not figure out what I wanted to do. And so I think there are days when it's tough, but for the most part, yeah, 5.
I don't post every day, but mainly because I have my blog, I have the podcast, I have Bookstagram.
You have kids.
I got kids. I cannot get my act together to post every single day, but I am up to like 3 times a week. So that's good for me. It used to be like once a week or maybe 0. So
at the end of the day, you got to do what works for you. So just realize, I think that you probably do get more followers if you post on a daily basis. So if that's important to you, then you should be posting on a daily basis. If it's not, then who cares?
Absolutely. All right. Number 3, getting personal on Instagram.
5.
How do you feel about it? Like, do you feel comfortable getting personal and has it been okay for you?
You know what? When I first started, I was really hesitant to say anything about me. And I actually didn't post a picture of myself until I had probably been doing it for a year. But I think that I enjoy posting more about myself and what I'm doing on my book Instagram than I do on my actual personal Instagram. So am I giving away my address and what I ate for the day? No, but I'm happy at least a few times a week to tell people what I'm doing or tell them about my life and my husband and my dog. And I think like my most popular picture on Instagram this year was of my wedding. So obviously I have no problem getting personal now.
Yeah, I struggle with this still. I don't have a problem posting pictures of myself.
Yeah.
My problem is there's no one ever around to take the pictures of me when I'm doing this. Like when my kids get home from school, like all of this stops. Every time I'm like, oh, I should say something personal about what's going on in my life. And I'm like, why does is anyone going to care? No one's going to care about this.
I think that there are so many people who are like, what are you reading today? What do you like? I'm reading a book. Like, I think that that gets very monotonous. And I think that it's important that if you want to be successful at Bookstagram, I think that there's something to be said for being authentic and coming across as someone with a life. And I think that people really respond to you giving them a little piece of you. And I think that it separates you. And I think if you can do it in a way that makes you feel comfortable without sharing too much information, then I think it is a good thing to do.
I do agree that it helps build the connection and all that.
Yeah, I think that you find the things that you like and that work for you. Like for me, I am not good at doing stories and putting my face in my stories and videoing and hearing myself talk. Like I think that you and I have laughed about the fact that I was a little hesitant to come on the blog because I was like, oh, I don't want to listen to myself talking and hearing myself. There are a lot of people who do videos on their stories and their faces on there and they're dancing and singing and just talking, you know, for an hour on book Instagram. And that's something like, you will probably never see me do that. So I give a little piece of me in my posts. I think that's how people have learned about me and gotten to know me. And that's how I've built a lot of my connections on there.
And I love how you do that. And I also have not done a stories video yet. I'm thinking about doing one coming up, but I'm nervous about it for all the things
reasons slippery
you
slope,
just said.
Sarah.
I know. I know. I also don't put my kids' face forward on my Instagram.
I get that.
I will do pictures of them if their face is kind of either sideways and you can't really see it very well or from the back. My profile's public and I don't know. I feel weird about that. So if any of y'all have wondered why I never post face forward of my kids, that's why.
You got to do what makes you comfortable and you got to remember the internet is forever, right?
The internet's forever. That's true. All right. Number four, you mentioned this earlier, but I purposely didn't ask you any more about it because I knew I was going to ask you about it here. Not having a TV in your house when you were a kid.
5.
Nice. And you said earlier you do feel like it helped foster your love of reading.
I mean, look, we weren't like Little House on the Prairie. Like we had TVs in our house. We just, my mom was a teacher and growing up, she just didn't want us watching TV during the week. So we went to the library and we got books every week. It really helped in the sense that it gave me and my sister a love of reading and books and seeking out information that has helped us all of our lives. And it's funny now because I mean, I don't really talk much about my job, but I do work in television and in books. So I'm kind of doing the best of both worlds.
I do find that ironic.
I know. And I love TV, but I think that I have a great mix of love of reading, love of TV, love of entertainment in general. So yeah, I'm super happy that was how we were raised growing up.
I lived a little bit at times like you did. My mom literally physically took all the TVs out of our house for periods of time when I was in high school. All right. Number 5, your early Bookstagram posts.
Ugh, one.
Oh, see, I look at your early posts and I'm like, these are really good for early posts. Mine are atrocious.
I like actually did a challenge a few months ago where it was like, post your very first picture and then redo it. Like, which was my way of saying, like, I hated my first picture so much.
Oh, so tell everyone what your first post was. I know what it was, but tell everybody what it was.
Well, look, my first posts were, I just did reviews. So it was just the book laying flat on the table, which was very simple. And my first book was A Little Life. And that I think that's a lot of people's first book foray into book Instagram. But my first pics were just over edited. I didn't like the layouts. My OCD like flares up when I look at them now. Like I'm glad I can like look back at them and see the history of my account. But yeah, one for me. I think that when I first started my account, I didn't know what it was. And it was very simple. And it was just a place for me to track what I'm reading. And it's grown to what it is today. And it fulfills so many different things now that I just don't think I could post like I used to. It had to change at a certain point.
Yep. And did you end up redoing your Little Life post?
I did.
Okay. I'm going to go I'll find that, y'all, and link to both of them in my show notes.
It was actually a challenge. So you can see the post. It's the first one and the last one. So.
Thank you so much. This has been a super fun discussion.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And there's nothing I love more than talking about books. And I don't think there's anything I like more than that than talking about book Instagram. So happy to spend the morning doing it.
And tell everybody where they can find you online.
I am at Jordys, Jordys.book.club on Instagram.
All right, everybody. The January Superlatives episode for patrons will air at the end of the month, and it will include Jordan's picks for categories like favorite and least favorite things about Bookstagram, best performing Instagram post ever, and best book to hibernate with in the winter. If you'd like to get this bonus episode and a new Superlatives episode every month, you can support the show for $5 a month on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio. Next week will be a mini episode. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.